Strangers, I know I usually start my episodes with a list of questions, but I'm gonna be honest. I racked my brain for questions to open this one, and I came up blank again and again. The only question I can come up with is, what happened to Brian Vlada Castle? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I recently participated in the True Crime and Paranormal Festival in Denver, Colorado, where I was lucky enough to meet some great podcasters and listeners. I was particularly interested in the independent podcasters whose work highlights personal or otherwise little-known cases. Family members and loved ones who have a missing loved one and who have diligently gathered and compiled all the information and evidence to try to bring their loved one home. Today's episode is about one of those missing loved ones. Just a quick note before we dive in, the bulk of the information in this episode came from the Hassel family, in particular Bethany Hassel. They put together a very comprehensive document with history, timeline, and pertinent facts. There is not a lot of coverage on this case, so if I don't cite something, you can assume it came from the family's document. When Steve Hassel returned home from a trip to Tennessee on November 15, 2021, he knew before even going inside the apartment he shared with his son Brian Vladek that something wasn't right. A package Steve had ordered was sitting by the front door. Vladek should have brought the package in when it got there, like he promised his dad he would. But there it was, where it had been for a week since it had been delivered. Inside the apartment, Steve found all the food that had been left in the fridge still there, untouched, and no dishes in the sink. Vladek's flip phone and charger were in his bedroom. The phone was dead. A pocket knife he'd recently purchased was left behind as well. And once Steve got the phone charged, it looked like it hadn't been checked since the 6th. Steve was concerned, but he'd returned home one day earlier than planned, and he figured Vlad had decided to stay somewhere else and would be back on the 16th. Besides, Vlad was an adult, almost 23 years old. But by the next evening, when Vlad hadn't come home, his sister Bethany filed a missing person report, and the family got to work trying to find him. Steve and his ex-wife Cheryl adopted Vlad and his older sister, Irina, when Vlad was 5 and Irina was 11. The siblings were living in an orphanage in Russia. There isn't a lot of information about how long they spent in the orphanage or what the experience was like. The couple gave him the name Brian, but he mostly went by Vladek or Vlad. Vlad and Irina joined 6 Hassel children in Florida, only 3 of whom were still young enough to be living at home. Older brother Jonathan soon went off to college, so Vlad mostly grew up with his sisters Irina, Bethany, and Kristen. Vlad learned English quickly, with the help of some Russian neighbors. And along with his Russian accent, Vlad lost any ties to Russia he might have had, though as an adult, he'd apparently expressed a desire to visit. He was an active kid who had trouble keeping still and so loved playing sports. According to his family, Vlad played soccer, t-ball, basketball, and peewee football. His favorite holiday was Christmas, and his sister Bethany recalled how one year he let her wrap him in Christmas lights and put the tree topper on his head. It was, by all outside appearances, a pretty happy childhood. He was very close with his sisters, and as a teenager would tag along with them when they had something called a New Year's lock-in. I googled it. I guess it's just like staying home on New Year's Eve. I've been doing that for more than a decade now. After seeing the umpteenth young woman in an impossibly impractical dress barfing off a curb before midnight, I decided to call it quits on the whole thing. I didn't realize there was a name for the tradition. Anyway, Vlad loved those gatherings and still remembered them fondly into his young adulthood. According to an interview his sisters gave, Vlad, quote, is the friendliest person you'll ever meet. He is constantly starting conversations with strangers. Anybody within a few feet of him, if you make eye contact, he's going to start a conversation just to hear more about your story. If there's a way that he can help in any way, he will try to, end quote. Steve and Cheryl divorced when Vlad was in middle school. Vlad went to live with Steve in Claremont, Florida until the end of high school when he moved to Texas to live with his half-sister Carrie in 2017 so he could fulfill his longtime dream of joining the Marines. From Texas, he would qualify to enlist in the California boot camp for the Marines instead of having to be based in South Carolina. Carrie was single and pregnant when Vlad moved in, and he was reportedly very helpful throughout her pregnancy, working three jobs to contribute financially. He was there with her when she gave birth and stayed with her in the hospital for a week after. By December of 2018, Vlad had graduated boot camp in San Diego and officially entered the Marines. His position at a desk was not what he'd envisioned all those years when he imagined being a Marine. About 8 months into his stint, he told the powers that be that his service was triggering negative memories from his time in the Russian orphanage. Whether or not this was true, it apparently had the desired result. Vlad was honorably discharged in the summer of 2019 for, quote, failure to adapt. Vlad moved back to Florida to live with his dad and his new stepmom. But, his family reports, he was aimless and struggled to figure out what to do. He'd spent so long wanting to be a Marine that now that that dream was over, he just didn't know who he was. In January of 2020, he moved back in with Carrie and her daughter, this time in Detroit, where he worked as an environmental services tech at the local hospital, once again being a supportive brother and now uncle. When COVID hit in March of 2020, Carrie had to quit her job because daycare shut down. Vlad supported the trio financially. But, still struggling to find his place, by the time August of 2020 rolled around, Vlad had moved twice, once to New Hampshire, then back to Florida with his dad and his dad's wife. Vlad was clearly in the midst of a depression. In an interview for WESH News, Steve said, quote, "I think he was just confused about what his life was headed toward because he hadn't been able to get a job and he was just depressed," end quote. At some point between August and November of 2020, Steve and his new wife split up, and Steve and Vlad hotel hopped for about 6 weeks until they found a new apartment in a complex called The Place at Alafaya in Orlando. As is common for people with depression, Vlad's radius of places he visited was pretty limited. He spent nights he couldn't sleep walking around the complex. He rarely used public transportation, preferring instead to walk, though he occasionally did use the free University of Central Florida buses that made a stop inside the complex. His family said he frequented Waterford Lake Plaza and University Boulevard near UCF, both of which were about an hour's walk from his apartment. Because of his frequent walks around the complex, he was well known to various maintenance workers who said they would sometimes see him go off into the woods behind the complex where he would smoke cigarettes and sing. But despite his depression, Vlad was still very friendly. According to his family, he, quote, would smile and start up conversations with anyone around him, wanting to hear their life stories. He is a kind and thoughtful person who has had a tough history. Vlad will start a conversation with anyone he meets and is well recognized at the restaurants and businesses he would frequent, end quote. But apparently, while some found Vlad's demeanor friendly, others found it off-putting. He was known to frequent Foxtail Coffee, where he would sometimes spend hours listening to music on headphones, pacing, and occasionally singing out loud. And God forbid someone sings in public. Listen, I get it, maybe you want to have a quiet conversation, or you're studying, or whatever, but the number of times I've gotten shitty looks from people in coffee places just for having a conversation at a regular volume is a good number of times, let me tell you. You want silence? Go to a library. Let people sing, for crying out loud. Just don't whistle. For the love of Harry Belafonte. But whenever someone would complain and an employee would ask him to pipe down, he always did, without a fuss. And he was generous, too. He rarely had much money on him because he'd frequently give whatever he had away. When he and his dad would go out to eat, if they happened to learn that their server was struggling, Vlad would insist on leaving a couple $100 tip. But in 2021, it seems, Vlad had very little desire for money anyway. As a teenager, he'd always wanted the latest phone and designer clothes, but now he was actively rejecting material things. He said material possessions were a distraction. Any money he did have, he spent on feeding friends he'd made in the local unhoused communities. Sometimes he would take one of these friends to the movies. And if he didn't have cash, he would let them use his credit card, which apparently his dad happily covered because he was glad to see Vlad find something that he was passionate about. By this point, he'd given away his tablet and purposefully broken his phone. Just before doing that, he'd gotten about 40 texts from an unhoused couple he'd helped out in the past. Whether or not the texts prompted him to break his phone, I don't know, but when his sister Irina and his dad insisted he get a flip phone, he got a new number and apparently did not update the couple with it. He also refused to sleep on a proper bed, preferring instead an air mattress on the floor. When his dad bought him a mattress, it sat unopened in the box. Vlad had also become pretty religious in the months leading up to his disappearance. I don't know if his family was very religious, but he started spending more time in the prayer garden of the local Catholic church and was apparently following a pastor on YouTube. His family hadn't been able to identify who this pastor was, but he seemed to focus a lot on heaven, archangels, and demons. And Vlad had taken to saying things like, quote, "What is the point if we can just be in heaven?" end quote. I'm going to refrain from going on a rant about how heaven is a concept created to make us work ourselves to death. You're welcome. In the summer of 2021, Vlad announced he was going to start preparing to hike the Appalachian Trail, a 2,100-mile stretch from Georgia to Maine. And while you don't have to hike the whole thing in one go, even if one is planning on hiking a portion, it does indeed take preparation and training. One doesn't just wake up one day and go hike the Appalachian Trail. It doesn't seem like Vlad was doing any serious training. But when he and his dad discussed renting a four-bedroom place to share with his sisters Bethany and Jody, Vlad said he wouldn't need a bedroom because he would camp outside to get ready for the trail. Indeed, Bethany would later say she never thought Vlad actually intended to follow through on this trip. She said he'd sometimes say things to see what kind of reaction he would get. Still, when the family began planning the trip to Tennessee to celebrate Bethany's birthday, Vlad said he'd meet them there because he'd be hiking on the trail. And while she didn't really think he'd be doing that, she warned him that if he did do something like that, he would need to keep his phone on him and remember to check it. Vlad apparently kind of waved this off, saying he'd be fine. But it wasn't just hiking that Vlad wanted to do. He told several people he intended to go off the grid after his father died. Not, I think, that that was imminent. I don't think Steve was particularly old or infirm. It's just that, according to his sisters, while Vlad had this urge to go dark, he didn't want to leave his dad alone or for his dad to be blamed, by the family or anyone else, for him leaving. And despite Vlad's rejection of material possessions, on November 3rd, he spent $60 on a pocket knife. He told his dad it was for protection. That same day, presumably as Vlad was returning home from making that purchase, the car that he and his father shared broke down near Waterford Lakes Plaza. Not calling his dad for fear he'd be angry, Vlad simply walked home. Steve wasn't angry, though. He said the car was old anyway and they had the money to replace it. They had it towed to a lot where they could deal with it when they got back from Tennessee. So, when Vlad announced that he wouldn't be joining the family on the trip to Tennessee, it meant he would have no car while his family was out of town. The night before the family left for Tennessee, Steve says Vlad was hyper-focused on religion, specifically archangels and demons. He reportedly told his father, quote, "You have to be the dark to kill the dark," end quote. His family assumed this was something he was getting from the YouTube pastor. I Googled the phrase, and almost everything was about a video game called Dark and Darker, but even there, it doesn't look like a phrase that's used. But I've certainly heard people talk about embracing their shadow selves as part of their healing journey, or whatever, so maybe it's something like that? I don't know. Steve was alarmed by Vlad's weird behavior, but not enough to cancel the trip or stay home or insist that Vlad join them. I'm sure, in hindsight, he probably wishes he had taken one of those options, but everything is clearer in hindsight. Before he left, Steve gave Vlad $100 cash and a credit card and offered to buy groceries, but Vlad insisted he'd be fine with what was already in the house. Steve reminded his son about the package due to arrive on the 8th. Vlad assured him he'd bring it inside, but of course, he never did. The last time anyone in his family heard from Vlad was around 2 a.m. on the morning of the 6th when he called his sister Irina. She would later say this wasn't unusual at all. She said they often talked at that time of the night just to check in. The conversation wasn't unusual either, just a normal chat. What was unusual was that she didn't hear from him again. She said they spoke nearly daily. According to the Find Vladek Facebook page, Steve checked in with Vlad via text and voicemail several times while he was in Tennessee to no avail. But it wasn't unusual for calls and texts to go unanswered. Vlad was known to leave the house without his phone, hence his sister's reminder that if he were to make that trek on the Appalachian Trail, he needed to bring his phone. Plus, the family was in the mountains in Tennessee, so Steve figured it was possible the calls and texts weren't even going through. Vlad had social media, but apparently never used it, so I suppose sending him a DM wouldn't have done much good either. And so, when Steve arrived back home to find the package sitting outside, all the food in the house untouched, and Vlad's dead cell phone, charger, and pocket knife sitting in his bedroom, he was worried. But not enough to file a report. Listen, you know me, stranger. If my husband is more than 10 minutes later than expected, I assume he's dead in a ditch somewhere. But apparently other people are less neurotic than I am. And Lord knows we've heard plenty of stories of people trying to file missing persons reports on adults and being waved off with an "I'm sure they'll turn up." And after all, Steve had come home a day earlier than planned. So even though it seems to me it would have been highly unusual for Vlad to stay with a friend, Steve figured maybe he was staying with a friend. But when the 17th came and went with no sign of Vlad, it was actually Bethany who called and reported him missing. The family hung flyers with Steve's number on it all over town, and she made a Facebook page that same day to let people know her brother was missing and to try to gather any information she could. Pretty soon, a maintenance man from the apartment complex called Steve and left a message that Steve apparently had a little trouble understanding. What Steve thought he heard the man say, and what he then reported to the police, was that the maintenance worker had seen Vlad, quote, "last Friday" on the basketball courts, and the two had chatted for about 5 minutes, after which point Vlad walked into the woods behind the complex. But the family determined that the worker must have meant he'd seen Vlad on the Friday before last, because otherwise he would have seen him on the 12th, and surely Vlad would have brought the package into the apartment by then if he'd been there. Plus, Vlad's phone hadn't been checked at all since the 6th. Also, when Bethany later listened to the message, she realized that the worker hadn't said he'd seen Vlad go into the woods. He said that sometimes Vlad did go into the woods and was suggesting they check there. Even though Steve and Bethany told police right away about their corrections, the information on the official police website page for Vlad wasn't updated for months, despite Bethany's insistence that she'd asked them to update it several times. On the 18th, the apartment complex managers said they'd review the security camera footage from the only two cameras on the complex, one outside the laundry room and one outside the gym, but that they couldn't release it to them without the police officially requesting it. It doesn't seem like that footage was ever officially requested, but it seems it wouldn't have made much difference anyway because the footage was only stored for 7 days, at which point it was taped over. So unless Vlad disappeared sometime between the 11th and the 18th, he wouldn't have appeared on any footage. Of course, it's possible the maintenance worker was right when he said he'd seen Vlad on the 12th, but it seems unlikely. And of course, Bethany and Steve went into the woods behind the complex themselves, but they only made it 30 feet in before being stopped by the dense overgrowth of trees, palmetto bushes, and swampy wetlands. The next day, the 19th, with permission from a local agriculture group, which was bafflingly required in order to search the woods, police had no more luck than Bethany and Steve had. They made it just about as far in as they had. Which leads one to assume that Vlad, if he'd ventured into those woods, would not have made it much further himself. On the evening of the 19th, Bethany updated the Facebook group on the progress of the search, which by then had included a helicopter flyover with thermal cameras, drones, and a canine unit. And though the search had been stymied by heavy rains, and Bethany said it produced nothing, according to a piece on a local Fox affiliate, deputies did find a red sandal. Steve confirmed that Vlad had the same type of sandal, but didn't remember him having them in red. In addition to the woods, police and the family searched local homeless shelters, the Catholic church Vlad hung out in, and Vlad's usual haunts around the Alafia Trail area and University Boulevard. Police also conducted a door-to-door canvass. As the canvassing continued on the 20th, police found an acquaintance of Vlad's who said Vlad came by his apartment on Monday the 15th, asking if he could stay there. The friend said no because he lived with his girlfriend and her kids. He alleges that Vlad then asked him if he had a gun. The man said he had a record, so wasn't allowed to own guns. According to Vlad's sisters, the man said Vlad seemed anxious to leave, but he asked Vlad why he needed a gun, and Vlad said it was for protection. When he asked him what he was anticipating needing protection from, Vlad said an animal. He also said he wanted to go off the grid. I'm just going to go ahead and say I don't find this story particularly believable. Unless Vlad had managed to disappear from around the 6th when he last used his phone to the 15th and then disappeared again? Then again, this means the maintenance worker could have been right when he said he saw Vlad on the 12th. But this would mean that in those 9 days between when Vlad last checked his phone on the 6th and when he stopped by the friend's apartment, he wasn't staying at home. And if that's true, you'd think the maintenance worker and his friend might have mentioned that he looked pretty unkempt. No one else reported him staying with them, which means he was likely sleeping outside. And if that was the case, he would have looked pretty disheveled and probably would have smelled pretty unshowered by the 12th or 15th. Unless he was staying at home but didn't bring the package inside for some reason, didn't touch any of the food, and didn't check his phone since the 6th and left it unplugged. All of it seems unlikely. Thank you. The family hired a private investigator who determined that Vlad had visited Foxtail Coffee on the evening of the 4th around 8 p.m. He bought a coffee, was listening to something on headphones, and he sat at a table alone where, according to another customer, he took out his pocket knife and placed it on the table. The customer was so uncomfortable with the presence of the knife that he apparently told an employee he was going to leave, but didn't mention the knife at that point. Why he felt the need to announce his departure is beyond me. You're not an airplane. You don't need to let everyone know you're going. Anyway, this same customer came back later, and when he found Vlad sitting outside the coffee place, he was apparently so uncomfortable with Vlad's mere existence that he then went in and complained that while Vlad wasn't doing anything then, nor had he really done anything earlier, he did have a pocket knife. Listen, I admit that I probably don't know the whole story, and maybe this particular customer had had run-ins with Vlad in the past that made him extra jumpy, but so far what we've heard about Vlad is that he was super friendly and generous, and sometimes he liked to sing and pace around in the coffee place. Plenty of people carry pocket knives, you know? Maybe he took it out of his pocket because it was uncomfortable to sit with it in his pocket? It doesn't sound like he was sitting there flipping it open and closed. The report was he placed it on the table. What beef this guy had with Vlad, I don't know. But beef he certainly had, and because he went and told on him that earlier he had placed a pocket knife on the table, the establishment was forced to ban him because of a no weapons rule. So it seems like what the restaurant did was place Vlad under a warning of trespassing, so that the next time he came into the coffee place, he would be trespassing. But Vlad had already left by the time all this went down, and he had no idea he was banned from one of his favorite places. And so, 2 days later, when Vlad showed up and ordered coffee and sat down, sometime around 7 a.m. on the 6th, sure enough, management called the police. Again, maybe I don't have all the facts here, but it seems to me that the employees at this place were familiar with Vlad. He was there a lot, and he had never caused a problem. Whenever they asked him to stop singing and sit down, like they were at the fucking Hall of Records or some shit, he always did so without a fuss. So why they didn't feel like they could just tell him about the complaint from the day before and ask him to leave instead of escalating right to the police? I don't know. Officer Smiley, not his real name, showed up around 7:30-ish, had the manager point out the dangerous criminal that was Vlad sitting quietly at a table drinking coffee. He asked him to step outside and proceeded to issue him a trespassing notice. I watched the footage. I should point out here that the timestamp on the body cam footage says it's from about 12:20 p.m. to about 12:40 p.m. Bethany said the body cam footage time was completely off and that a screenshot from the security cameras inside the coffee shop read 7:30. At any rate, the officer doesn't tell Vlad why he's being issued a trespass violation. He just tells him it's a private business and they don't have to tell him why. Okay, sure, but couldn't you just say, hey, buddy, the place has a zero weapons policy and you took out a pocket knife? Like, what's the issue? Instead, he says that a business can issue a trespass for anything they want, quote, including the kind of shirt you wear, end quote. Tell that to my kid's gymnastics place that let a man sit in there with a Trump No More Bullshit hat on where there were preschoolers doing cartwheels. Anyway, there's Vlad being polite and compliant and cooperative. He keeps putting his hands in his pockets because clearly it's cold and he's wearing shorts, and the officer asks him several times to take his hands out of his pockets. Vlad seems perfectly calm and rational. It isn't until the officer makes him give his thumbprint that he's like, wait a minute, this is fucked up. You have to put me in the system for this? Am I a felon now? But the encounter ends peacefully, and Vlad walks away as Officer Smiley whistles and moves on to his next act of heroism. Also, not for nothing, but the manager of the place never once tells the officer that they know Vlad and that he's never been a problem. I know she didn't have to, but I don't know. It seems to me that if I were the manager of a place where a regular customer was suddenly being banned because of some fucking narc, I'd come to his defense a little bit. Indeed, his sisters said this whole thing is especially upsetting because Vlad really did consider Foxtail Coffee to be a safe haven. For someone who has a small repertoire of hangouts, losing one can be devastating. In an interview, Bethany said, quote, "Watching that body cam footage, we could see the pain and hurt in his eyes as he was trying to cover it up. But we could tell that he was hurt. Even though he was trying to make jokes and trying to make small talk, you could tell how much of an impact it made on him," end quote. And Steve said, quote, "My first thought was he had a mental breakdown because of what happened with the coffee shop and his level of depression to start with, and that maybe he went off into the woods like he'd one time thought of doing and just stayed there," end quote. And also, there on the footage, you can clearly see, plain as day, on Vlad's feet, red sandals. This was the last verified sighting of Vlad before he seemingly vanished into thin air. DNA conducted on the red sandal came back inconclusive, and it seems Bethany has had a hard time getting the police to share information about the sandal with her. I have no idea why. And you know me, stranger, I'm no investigator tasked with finding a missing person, but I find it strange, to say the least, that police didn't even tell the Hassel family about the coffee shop incident until February of the following year. That would be 3 months later, and the family didn't even get to see the footage until September. And maybe that seems like an unimportant detail, but don't forget, the footage not only shows what he was wearing, which seems to me to be important information to have when looking for someone, but perhaps knowing that Vlad had had this upsetting experience might have helped shed some light as to his state of mind around the time he seems to have gone missing. In April of that year, another acquaintance of Vlad suddenly came forward to say Vlad called him on November 4th, asking if he could stay at his place for a few days. The guy said no, but according to the Find Brian Hassel website, quote, "He had said Vlad was upbeat and energetic during the call. Vlad said he had spent the last few months wanting to have a pilgrimage and preach the Bible, but had had a change of heart and now wanted to sing," end quote. That same month, the family put up billboards and sought media attention because they felt not enough people knew Vlad was missing. Steve told WESH, quote, "Maybe somebody followed him into the woods and caused him not to come back out," end quote. The media attention led to a few tips, but nothing panned out. Bethany received a tip from someone who said they saw Vlad at a Wawa convenience store sometime around 8 or 9 a.m. on November 6th. He'd been talking to an older person from the local unhoused community. In September of 2022, nearly a year after he'd gone missing, another search was conducted of the woods behind the apartment complex, this time with nearly 30 search dogs. Unfortunately, nothing came of this either. On August 2nd of 2023, a body was found in the area, but the medical examiner determined it wasn't Vlad. His family still holds out hope that Vlad is alive. If I had to guess, I'd say that Steve was probably right when he said Vlad might have had a breakdown of sorts after receiving the trespassing notice from his favorite coffee place. Remember, he thought his dad would be angry that their shared car had broken down. Is it possible the thought that he now had a record, or at least a folder with his thumbprint in it with the local police, was enough to send him away? People with depression often feel like a burden to their loved ones. Perhaps the idea that his family would come home to learn about the incident was too much for him to bear? It may be clear to everyone else that his family was nothing but loving and supportive of him, but depression clouds your view and makes it hard to see reality sometimes. Also, if his mental state in the weeks and days before his family left for Tennessee is any hint, it's possible that Vlad was suffering from undiagnosed schizophrenia. It's often something that doesn't present itself until one's late teens or early 20s, and it can sometimes be triggered by a traumatic event. If that is the case, it's nearly impossible to determine what his mental state was in those last few days before he stopped replying to texts and calls. Vlad's sister Jody said, quote, "There's 1,000,001 possibilities of what could have happened, but there's no clear direction to look. I do believe someone out there knows what happened. There's so many people that probably have interacted with him that just don't realize that he's a missing person, and the information that they hold could be the key to his case. Just reaching them is going to be what it takes to really find him. And if he is out there, okay, doing his own thing, that's great. That's all we need to know. But in my heart of hearts, something is wrong. Vladek has never been without contact with his family. He wouldn't let Irina, his biological sibling, worry for 2 years. And he definitely doesn't like the spotlight on him. It's like pulling teeth to get him in pictures. If he had seen any of the coverage that he's had, he would have reached out to someone and be like, I'm good, just doing my own thing. But there's been nothing. So something's not right. And I really worry about the potential of someone taking advantage of him, or he's afraid of somebody. Something is not right." End quote. Indeed, something is definitely not right. Brian Vladek Hassel is 5'8", white, with blondish brown hair and blue eyes. I'll post some pictures on our social media accounts. If you see someone resembling Vladek, please discreetly take a picture and record when and where the sighting occurred. Please send it to the Orange County Sheriff's Office in Florida. If you have information that could lead to the discovery of Vlad, please reach out to the Orange County Sheriff's Office Missing Persons Unit at 407-254-7000. The case number is 21-83864. Or email findbrianvladekhasel@gmail.com. Next time on Strange and Unexplained, we hear a lot of people making comparisons between a certain modern-day politician and a certain political leader from the past. But how fair is the comparison? Can it really be that anyone today would use the same playbook as Hitler? I will do my best to take an objective view. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment with help from Grabbag Collab. This episode was written by me, Daisy Egan, with research by the Strange Research Squad. Sound engineering and mixing by Henry Lavoie. If you have an idea for an episode, head to our website, strangeandunexplainedpod.com, and fill out the contact form. I will write back. For more amazing content, join us at patreon.com/grabbagcollab, where for just $5 a month, you get all the Grab Bag exclusive shows, and for $8, you get those, plus Amber Hunt's Crimes of the Centuries and Strange and Unexplained early and ad-free. Grab Bag is an all-female and non-binary-owned profit-share network where our contributors get to keep ownership of their shows. We strive to give a platform to those who might not be able to land themselves on a bigger network. Who knows, maybe you have a podcast idea you'd like to pitch to Grabbag. We've got live recordings, watch parties, book clubs, and more. Why, there's so much going on over at Grabbag, you'll wonder if we missed the memo on how capitalism works. Join me on Instagram at SNUPod, Daisy Egan, and Grabbag Collab, or head to the Facebook page to join in the conversation. If you like the show, please visit a sponsor with our unique code, give us a quick review and 5 stars, subscribe and download, and tell a friend. If you don't like the show, the name of the podcast is Kennedy Saves the World. Stay strange.